ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our co-host again is Mary Poland, and we're going to explore another facet of her business and talk about her her adventures as a SaaS founder. Hi, Mary. Nice to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so besides being the founder of Digital Strategy School, which we talked about a ton in the last episode, you are also a founder of the platform called Doki. Is that right?
Yes.
So what does Doki do?
Doki is a tool for delivering online courses, which are also partnered up with like mentorship and masterminds. So it's sort of like a combination course delivery and also a place where those, you know, for example, people that do coaching programs can actually bundle it with evergreen courses.
Mm-hmm. So I see that you are definitely scratching your own itch
and
being very smart about aligning all your ducks in a row here. So you have a consulting practice teaching business founders build their courses, sell them software to do so, and also use that software to run Digital Strategy School. Is that right?
That's right.
That's super smart. How did you arrive to that?
Well, the idea for the platform came, you know, when I was doing more web design implementation. I was doing, almost everybody that I worked with had some kind of online course or online membership, you know, the online products. And so I found myself doing a lot of implementation, a lot of technical implementation, you know, hooking up wishlist member with PayPal and MailChimp and just hooking up all the pieces. And it was really, really time consuming. And it was making the budgets, you know, pretty big because it required so much of my, you know, time and attention and troubleshooting. And that's not really my zone of genius. It's like, I can do it, but is this super exciting? You know, I prefer the strategy and the planning side of it. So, you know, I remember saying to my partner, I was like, oh, is there like an easier way to do this? Like to set up, you know, the same setup every time and just kind of reduce some of that time. And he was like, oh, we should build our own. And we laughed, ha ha ha.
And then you did it.
And I was like, you should build that. I don't have the code background to do that. And he was like, yeah, maybe we should do that. And we did some research. And at the time, we could only find a couple platforms that were really doing it. And I mean, now there's actually tons of other, you know, similar platforms in the same space, but we thought, okay, well let's take a stab at this and let's build the thing that we kind of wish existed. And we slowly kept seeing more and more platforms popping up and we're like, oh my gosh, do we do this? Do we, you know, do we go all in? Do we like, you know, change our mind? And so we had a moment, like a fork in the road where we were trying to decide, you know, if we really want to build it the way that we want to build it, we know it's going to be a pretty major time commitment. And Digital Strategy School was kind of taking off at the same time. So we made the decision. It was like, if we're going to launch this, we got to go all in. And so we basically decided Ben would work full time on Doki and I would work, you know, full time with Digital Strategy School and the consulting. So we kind of did some bootstrap inception so that we could self-fund the creation of Doki. And then we finally launched officially a couple months ago and then we'll be out of beta by September. So it's been a bit of an adventure.
It sounds super exciting. So you, between yourself and your partner, Ben, you have a unique skill set that allows yourself to build everything without hiring anyone, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Lucky you.
Lucky or crazy. I don't know. Maybe a bit of both.
So these days, we see everyone building their own courseware, and for a reason, because, you know, online education is a huge thing and people sell a ton of these products. So what is your unique value proposition? What makes Doki different from other platforms?
Yeah. So for us, it's the combination of, you know, for example, I was working with a lot of coaches that would bundle their course. So let's say, you know, you pay $1,000, you get access to an hour of my time plus, you know, access to this online course. So these sort of combination guided course experiences. And the reason we think this is important is, you know, you may have noticed this too. It feels like everyone and their grandma has an online course or some kind of online product. And so it's almost like the new business card. Like I think it's almost becoming expected. You know, you hear a lot of people saying like, oh, you know, I have an idea for an online course and I don't know what it is yet, or they're putting it together. And I think it's going to get more and more difficult to sell courses at a higher price point unless they're bundled with some kind of, whether it's mastermind time, coaching, mentorship, consulting. So I love the idea of having an asset that you can kind of use to leverage your price. And so a lot of the people that we do actually work with have these. They're not really just courses. They're more experiences. I think it allows you to kind of sell at a higher price point because your course is not just a course. There's kind of, you can launch it at a specific time in the year and have like a cohort of people going through it at the same time. So you can bundle it with, say, you know, a mastermind group where there's like six people on a call. And then you can also, you know, book your one-on-one with your teacher. So it's a place where all of that stuff can kind of live in one spot without, again, like scratching your own itch, I was having to create, you know, go on YouTube and create the live Google Hangout and send that through email to this group and sort of just tracking all of those different students and all of those different group calls was getting a bit cumbersome. And so we find a lot of the coaches that we're working with have these similar business models. So we haven't seen a lot of the platforms do that in a really streamlined way. So we're hoping that that becomes more of our differentiator is the people that are not just doing online courses, but online programs and online experiences and mastermind experiences.
You're so right, because it's a double-edged sword. If you launch a coaching offering, which is a coaching component, then it kind of lacks structure and wait to charge a ton. While if you're selling just a course without guidance, it lacks guidance and it lacks the accountability thing. And with all thing, mastermind group component can also be very powerful. So you can only charge more if you provide a combination of that. And there has been no platform to handle that before Tokyo period, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, we're really in the beginning stages. So for us, it'll be a matter of finding out, you know, are there enough people with this need as well? Because, you know, again, scratching our own itch, but are there enough people in the market that desire that side of things? And, you know, we hope so as well. But if you don't want to, you know, combine your course with one-on-ones and you just want to do an evergreen as well, Doki can totally do that as well. So you can do, you know, dripped courses, open access libraries, date-based launches, and that sort of thing. So,
So it's a pretty complicated piece of software. Tell us a little bit more about the features. What exactly are you handling here? That is course delivery. Mm-hmm. What else? Scheduling, masterminds. How does it work?
Yeah, so there we're in the midst of building out our, you know, scheduling and sort of group call type offering. So we're still in beta. So right now, people can launch, they can launch evergreens, they can launch, you know, based on a date, the content can drip, you know, every 7 days, every however many days or weeks or months that you want. And you can package the same content in multiple different ways. So we do think that our sort of packaging system is going to be interesting. And that's something that, for example, I really needed with Digital Strategy School is I wanted the ability to sell just the first six of the 12 modules. And so that's what I'm doing, for example, with summer school is just selling the first six modules, but bundling that with some mastermind time and some one-on-one time. So we're in the process of moving Digital Strategy School over to Doki so we can finally start to use Doki with all of those completed features. It's much bigger than it was when we initially had our idea of like, let's make a thing that builds online courses and does this and does dripping and, you know, factors in people's time zones. And, you know, so it's of course grown over time. I'm sure you've probably seen this in the SaaS universe. But we waited way too long, I think, to launch our MVP. That's certainly something that we've learned is like we almost wish we had focused on one core feature because it's a beast for sure. You know, it took us a year and a half, almost 2 years to really get to the point where we could get people on it, which is kind of insane.
So, yes, exactly. I mean, I've seen so many pieces of software turn into, as they say, Franken software or something, you know, because of the amount of features. Mm-hmm. And it kind of seems natural to keep just adding nice features because it's so cool, while you should just focus on a couple which are your differentiating factors.
Yeah.
And just build those and ship those and see what happens. That's like the best path. Exactly. So you didn't do that.
Yeah, it's like we did that partially, but we, like, I think we had assumptions of what was going to be most important. And I think we just waited too long to get people on it. You know, like Ben has crazy high standards and he's like, oh, I can't, you know, put people on this broken platform. And part of me is like, no, we kind of do need to have people on that broken platform, even if it's, you know, friends that are also needing that tool. And so, you know, we do wish we'd gotten people on it earlier, but also, I think we are trying to be pretty streamlined about we know we're not going to be everything to everyone. We have no qualms about recommending people to our competitors and being like, oh no, you should totally use Teachable for that if that's what you're looking for. So we're trying to be smart about, you know, like how obviously we have to listen to our customers and say, like, how many people are asking for this? And is this a really important feature? Or is that kind of, that's not what we're really built for. So people that want like membership communities and inter-student interaction and that sort of thing, we don't have that built in. Will we? Is that really important? I don't know yet. And that's something that we're just at the beginning of our journey, I think, in just getting people that are actually using it. But we had some pretty big clients be our first official beta testers, and they had hundreds of students. So we kind of went from having, you know, nobody actually using it to suddenly overnight we have hundreds of people using it. And that was seriously scary. But it's also really exciting.
How did that feel, and what takeaways did you learn from that process of making the product live to real people?
Oh man, it's so scary and so exciting at the same time. I mean, you know, Ben was ready to be up till midnight, you know, fixing bugs, and honestly, nothing happened. Like, it was so quiet, nothing happened. There was no weird bugs or anything like that. So the tests all went really well. So that was really great. I think within a few days or weeks, there were a few questions like, oh, we noticed that like we wanted to like, you know, remove a student from the system, but we didn't have any, you know, features built in to allow a teacher to remove someone automatically. So there's still some things that we're going to do on a manual level while we're growing the feature set. But so really the feedback was kind of minor, just, you know, feature requests or, oh, it would be nice if it did this, but it's not a deal breaker. And so, yeah, we have a little Slack channel that all of the beta testers are in, and they can request features or, you know, vote features up. And there was like a weird glitch with a time zone thing, because I think one person was in Spain and he figured out that there was something happening with the time zone that was a really quick fix that didn't affect anyone. So far, you know, nothing major has, nothing's exploded yet. But yeah, it's a crazy process to finally get people using it and encountering things that you don't really expect necessarily, or, you know, hearing people ask the same questions where you think it's really obvious in your interface where to do something, and it's confusing. So it's definitely informing some of the new, you know, design changes that we want to make and the user interface and just making things really simple. But the amazing thing is, over the last couple of months, I've been able to meet some of the students that are actually using it for some of our clients. And they're like, oh, the interface is so simple. Like, it really feels like the content is highlighted. So there isn't really this messy interface. You know, there's really only a few things to do, and that's access the content. And so that was really good feedback.
That's one of the perks of being a design founder. You can actually do great design for your own product. Isn't that awesome?
and that's tough too, right? Because it's like there's so many things that you either want to fix or make better or improve. And just finding that balance between, you know, either improving or fixing existing features, building out the next ones, improving the interface, you know, doing a content marketing strategy for it, doing onboarding. So there's so many pieces that need, you know, doing at the same time. And it's a matter of figuring out what the priorities are and where's our time going to be best spent. So yeah, it's an interesting learning experience.
So share a bit about your process. Let's imagine you have a new feature or need to redesign something. What do you do? Like, do you ship a sketch, mockup, and come up to Ben and say, like, Ben, when I look at that, how does it work for you guys?
Honestly, we're still figuring out what the best way to do this is. So there's been times where I would put together like a quick Photoshop mockup and show him something, and he would just kind of, you know, take it and run with it. Other times I would log in and I would just start messing in, you know, Firebug and kind of editing the CSS, take a screenshot, send it to him. And for a while there, we were kind of working separately in our own little bubbles. Like, so he's working on the programming and I'm working on like design, and we weren't having enough meetings together where we're like, okay, let's make sure we're on the same page. So we really saw that, you know, even though we're partners working together, it can be really easy to just kind of make assumptions and go in your own direction. So now every week we have, you know, a standing meeting, and we really make sure that we're on the same page about things. So sometimes we'll do a design sprint and sit together and make sure that we're doing that stuff and making sure that we're kind of aligned with our idea for things. So yeah, it's honestly, we're in the midst of figuring out what is our process, because this is the first time that now we're actually really having to work together, whereas before we kind of had these separate roles. And now everything is kind of intertwined, and our, you know, content marketing strategy is going to have to be aligned with making sure certain features are ready. And so we just really, really have to communicate and make sure that we're on the same page constantly.
Yeah, it's exciting to see that coming together, because in client projects, you're always that standalone designer who just ships stuff. Mm-hmm. And that process got to happen in every product. So I imagine like poor software that we see too often is just the result of that lack of communication that you're trying to bridge. And you have all the givens like perfectly aligned. You're partners in life, so you probably have like a good level of understanding each other well. You're definitely looking at the same commercial, you know, goals together.
Yeah.
And yet you have trouble figuring out the effective way of doing that. Imagine how's that like for just a random team out there in the world?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's honestly, it's kind of fascinating and fun and challenging and all of those things in one. Just like our communication has to be top notch, and we have to make sure that we're even like understanding how each of us wants to be encouraged, or, you know, like if one of us is in a funk, like how do we make sure that we, you know, keep the others, you know, head up and that sort of thing. So really it's like an amazing learning experience of, you know, like how do we cheerlead each other? How do we encourage? How do we make sure we're showing each other that we're appreciative of each of our roles? Because sometimes, you know, sometimes my focus, I mean, really my energy and focus is a lot on Digital Strategy School, because that's where the revenue is coming in. And so just making sure that Ben still feels like, yes, like Doki is a priority for me, but we need to make sure that bills are getting paid here so that we can keep making sure that you can do what you can do over here. You know, and our future goal is to have Doki take up more of that revenue and not just rely on Digital Strategy School and the consulting. But yeah, so it's honestly, it feels like we're in the middle of finding out like, what is this balance and how many projects can we take on, and how do we make sure that Ben can keep, you know, focusing on really getting Doki, you know, feature complete. So it's, it's a crazy learning experience.
I'd love to talk about pricing, because, there are two edges of pricing. One is how your clients price the courses to their own clients, and the other, how do you price your own software serving that to clients? So what's your take on that, and what's your pricing strategy with tiers, ballpark figures, anything?
Oh man, I honestly find pricing is one of the hardest things, and it's hard not to get caught up in, well, like what are our competitors doing, and like what percentage are they taking of the course sales, and all that stuff. So, you know, really we're just giving our beta testers a very favorable rate. We have two different pricing models. So one is like a flat rate. We don't take any percentage of your course fees, which obviously makes sense for the people that have, you know, $1,000 courses or $2,000 courses. They don't want any, you know, cut taken off the top. And then the smaller one right now is $29 a month, which is ridiculously affordable, or at least we think so. And then also a 3% fee of whatever the cost of the course that you're selling. Once we're out of beta, those prices will change. But it's been interesting to, you know, some people are like, holy crap, that's so cheap. And then we'll have someone that already has a few $100 course ready to go. And they're like, well, I don't know if I'll sell enough to make that worth it. And I thought, you could sell one of those and it would already have paid for itself. And so maybe they're not our ideal customer, right? So it's hard to kind of get a gauge on who are our customers and what are they actually willing to pay and what's reasonable. So we still have to do so much research around that.
It's great that you're approaching these two models because there's definitely that factor. For example, you're building a pretty expensive course, but the sales might trickle out and you don't want to get, you know, stuck with that $400 a month bill for supporting the software which runs a course that doesn't sell.
Absolutely.
That's where your second plan definitely works best. And your first plan is on the opposite probably, right? For those who have the sales going on well.
Yeah, it's like if you just want to get started and you're not sure if it'll sell, you can start with the smaller one, but you can upgrade at any time. So if you see that your sales are doing pretty well, you can upgrade to the $99 a month for now. And, you know, we feel like that allows us to have a bit of flexibility and see, are more people signing up for that $100 plan or are they starting at the lower one? And if we are working with people that are doing more of the courses lumped with, you know, consulting or mentorship, we suspect that those price points are going to be a bit higher. So we suspect people are going to go with the higher monthly plan. So that might be more of our, you know, target audience. I was in an awesome mastermind too. And a few suggestions that were made were, it seems like our target audience, for example, isn't people that are thinking about putting together an online course, but it's people that already have some assets produced. So one of them was suggesting you should go on Gumroad and approach anyone that already has an ebook and be like, hey, we'll put your content on our platform and actually turn it into a course. And if you like it, then, you know, you start your plan, which I thought was kind of an interesting approach, you know, actually reaching out to people that already have some kind of asset or content created.
Actually, I interviewed a Teachable founder for my book, so I can share some techniques that I learned from him. Here's a pretty, yes, his name is Ankur Nagpal, and he's a really cool guy. So one of their content marketing strategies is that, you know, they're approaching people who not only have content, but they have an audience, yes, which is kind of a secondary. It's more important because that means they're making money with it. So they're seeing where people have an audience and they look at the place where that audience comes from. Let's say, are these people, you know, YouTube gurus, or are these people bloggers, or are they something else? And they split up their marketing verticals for each of these categories where people obtain their audience from. This is a pretty nifty way of doing that.
Very, very smart. I think that's brilliant. And, you know, with each passing week and month, like we're starting to tune into that a little more of, you know, for example, the first person that hopped on our platform, like she's a pretty well-known, you know, business strategist. And so all of her students are also the kind of people that are thinking of creating courses. And so when she mentions like, yeah, we're using Doki, you know, a number of her students have suddenly emailed me and reached out and said like, oh, hey, I heard that, you know, Tara's using Doki. And so even just from having one influencer using the platform to see how many people have reached out to us has kind of got the gears turning and saying, great, like who are the influencers that we need to reach out to use our platform that can kind of start to feed this, you know, like momentum basically.
Absolutely. At Bacon Beast that I've just come back from, Nathan Berry shared his story of ConvertKit, and one of their biggest strategies was approaching influencers because they are building software for bloggers. Mm-hmm. So like nailing a few key bloggers in the space means that you can name drop that to anyone in a cold email and be like, whoa, I want to do that too because, you know, this and that does that. And there is like a ton of little niches and a niche, like a super important person in each niche.
Definitely.
Doing something like that. There is a ton of interesting strategies out there. So my next question is, you're building a product that is client facing, which means you're actually designing two user interfaces. One is, you know, facing the student and the other is facing the teacher. Mm-hmm. So let's say Teachable's approach is making it all about the teachers and making it, you know, top priority. Do you have any kind of opinion on that and how you're approaching that kind of design?
That's interesting. I think at first, one thing we thought was that it felt like a lot of these platforms were very marketing focused, and it was focused on helping the teacher sell their tools, but maybe the student experience wasn't super great. So I think initially we were thinking, let's make a really amazing, really simple student experience, especially factoring in that when people are doing online courses, they're often distracted, or they have other tabs open, or maybe they're like, you know, kids in the background. So we wanted to create something that felt really smooth and really simple, which I think we have done, and that's the feedback we've been getting. But we do need to factor in that the, you know, the teacher interface needs to be simple enough so that if you, if the teacher wants to see where the when the next call is, when the group calls are, which students have which access, like that also needs to be really honed in and streamlined as well. So I think both are going to be important. I think right now our teacher admin is pretty solid. Obviously, there's tons of room for improvement, but I think both are, they feel equally important. But yeah, I guess we're going to find out, I guess, as we get more feedback from teachers. But we did get some really good feedback from a couple teachers who said they were impressed because they were very non-technical people. And they were like, there was only so many places for me to click. It was so easy. I didn't have to like dig into any documentation to figure it out. It was really obvious. And so while the platform is complex, in a way, it's still quite simple. So I think we're trying to build it so that it's as simple as possible for non-techie people to be able to do what they need to do quickly.
Yeah, that's honey to my ears. I love simple products. So try to keep that as like, and try to fight off those feature requests as much as you can, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in your journey, what were the key takeaways that you learned? I see that there is a lot of, you know, room for growth yet because you're not commercially viable yet and just getting out of beta this year. But I'm sure that journey of a year and a half, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that journey definitely taught you something. So could you share a few key takeaways of getting into a SaaS business as a founder?
Oh, yes. So many learnings.
Would love to hear that.
Yeah, I really do think we waited too long to get people using it. I think, like, I know there were times where Ben spent 6 months working on a feature that in the end is actually not a part of you know, that kind of thing, or, you know, maybe trying to decide on tech and then you realize like, oh, actually that tech is kind of going out the door and we shouldn't have based it on that and that sort of thing. You know, for example, Ben actually decided to use Doki as a chance to learn Ember. So he was kind of learning the language at the same time as he was building a new product, which, you know, it's great now. At the time, like, was that the best idea? Maybe not. So I think it could have been so much simpler. It's sort of, what's the minimum that we need to do to get someone teaching a course? And I think we overcomplicated it for sure. And we probably should have talked to more people, done more, you know, interviews and just kind of ask people a little more questions before we made assumptions about, oh, it's going to have this and this is necessary. And so, you know, a lot of assumption testing should have happened probably earlier on. I think we did some like recorded demos or some sort of screencast where we would share with, you know, the teacher and the team of people that they were going to be working with. And even that, I think we waited way too long. And so as soon as we got off the call, like there were so many amazing questions. And two of them were actually instructional designers as well. So it was like, duh, of course we should have had instructional designers using the platform or even just kind of having some discussions with us to give their insight. So that was kind of a duh moment when we got off and Ben was like, oh man, we totally should have done that call like at least 6 months ago, right? And I was like, ah. So it's been it's like frustrating, but also you don't really learn those lessons until you're you know, kind of messing things up, right? You're like, oh, well, that's good to know. So I would say, like, you know, getting to MVP sooner, I think, is really ideal, and not making assumptions that just because even if one or two people are asking for a feature, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the most important feature. And as you probably know, people request features, but then they don't even pay for those features when it comes time to put their money where their mouth is. So I think that's another thing, is just checking those assumptions, getting the MVP absolutely like what is the minimum that you need to provide the value? And again, it's so easy to say in hindsight, but as a designer, it's really tough to know, like, how soon do we actually let this out into the world when the design doesn't feel like, you know, pixel perfect and really, really like an amazing experience, but the MVP isn't necessarily about creating this gorgeous experience so much as it's like, is this a viable business idea? So that's something we would have probably changed up our milestones looking back. But I'm sure
you still have a lot of insights to come because after you take it out to the live market, you know, and spend a few years practicing that.
Yeah, I really do feel like we're still in the beginning of all that learning and that journey. But I think the sooner you can talk to humans and just be really honest and show people what you're working with and just be willing, in a way, it's being willing to be vulnerable, like showing people unfinished products, which I think was much more of a struggle for Ben than it was for me. I was like, let's just show people. And he's like, no, but there's like broken code and stuff like that. But, you know, even he has logged into a number of different SaaS products and been like, oh my gosh, like, look at all the errors that it's throwing me. And so I was like, see, lots of people have SaaSes that are broken. So it's finding that balance is really tough. And we're just trying to be open to the learning and documenting it as we go.
Mm-hmm. I do wish you all the luck in the world in promoting the product, because it seems that you have that niche figured out pretty well and scratching very good itch for your customers. So great potential out there. Keep up great work, definitely.
I'd love to know if you have any words of wisdom, having seen, you know, behind the scenes of so many SaaS.
You think you are pretty much on top of most issues, so we'll see. It's all about practice, you know. Really depends from product to product, from founder to founder. But it's great that you build out a simple, you know, product design focused as a design founder. How can I not be compassionate to you, you know? Right. And I think products with design founders have great potential because it's, of course, you know, that barrier to putting it out, exactly because of the reason that you mentioned, that it's too rough, you know, not too polished, et cetera, et cetera. You still have harder time getting the MVP out, but the ultimate product is definitely more beneficial than the one hacked together, right. Probably. I don't know. Hopefully I'm right.
I hope so, too.
Because you have a technical co-founders, you have all the strengths to leverage here. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. You don't have to spend, you know, thousands of dollars outsourcing that part. Definitely. All cards in your hands. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell our listeners what page they can visit to see that in action, if that's available yet.
Yeah, you can go to doki.io. Mm-hmm. And on that page, you'll be able to see some of the features and the roadmap and even request access if you want to check out the beta, which will be, we should be finished and out of beta by September.
Mm-hmm. By the way, tell us about the name briefly.
Yeah, when we were doing research on sort of, teaching and education related words, we found this, it was Doce, D-O-C-E, but it was pronounced Doce. And I think it's like a Latin related word to teaching. And so we kind of had this, we said Doce and it was like, oh, okie dokie. And we thought, oh, that's kind of fun. Like, so we actually made our consulting company Okie Doce. And then the product itself is Doce, which we thought was kind of a cute play on words.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. So thank you for sharing your experience with us today. It's definitely awesome and wish you best of luck with that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's the final episode today. So I would love to hear a couple more words about, you know, general design inspiration, advice, anything for our listeners so that they can apply it in their business like tomorrow.
Oh my gosh. Where to begin? I don't even know how to answer that. Design resources.
Anything that you think it's really precious and can be applied?
I guess if it's I mean, to non-designers, I'm always saying, make sure you hire a designer and actually, you know, don't underestimate the power of design for every part of your process, you know, from the onboarding to even offboarding, right? So things like, how does your welcome document look? How does your sign-off document look, and all the pieces in between? So I just encourage people to be really mindful of what is every touch point look and feel like, and not even just from a design perspective, but just like how well crafted is the copy. So you're really looking at designing the whole experience of working with you, I think is pretty key. And it's a way to kind of up level your pricing, your services, everything kind of gets elevated when you take the time to design each touch point.
I love the way you phrased it. Thank you.
Awesome.
That's awesome. That's wider term of user experience. You know, yeah. Everything is user experience. You know, all these touch points and even support and offboarding, whatever. These all are parts of their experience, and we should be designing the whole thing, right?
Absolutely. Even like you said, not just for software, but just even the simple things like, you know, when you've got a questionnaire that you're sending somebody, is it just like a Word doc that's got no formatting? So just kind of tightening up all of those pieces to make the whole experience from start to, you know, finish really, really pulled together.
All right, Marie, thank you so much for being with us during this podcast season. It was amazing, and I'm sure our listeners learned a ton from you, and thanks for sharing your wisdom.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thanks, you too.